Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, I just got to town and I need a presentation printed for a big meeting tomorrow.
Well, Staples has everything you need to print, scan, and fax.
Great. Oh, just got a text. The home office made changes to the presentation.
No problem. You can access your files from a USB, email, or the cloud.
And the meeting isn't tomorrow, now it's today.
Our machines are self-service, so there's no waiting.
And it's not here. Now it's in Ebensburg.
I hear it's lovely this time of year.
Print, scan, fax, and copy at Staples, your office away from home.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, first of all, I've been sick for 5 days. Then I try calling into my own show, and they won't let me call in. Yay! Okay, so I'm going to try not to do all my usual antics. If you're listening to me now, you already know that I don't sound like myself. I've literally, and I mean literally, been whispering for the last 24 hours just to save my voice, just to do this show. So I'll try to make it quick so we can get Russ on the line because I know he's holding. Obviously, we're having Russ Emanuel today on the show, 1 o'clock Central Standard Time. Reminder to everyone, tomorrow Jennifer Benson is going to be on the show with if I could pronounce it right, it almost looks like Evanescence, but it's not. And frankly, let's just not try to pronounce it. Let's save that for tomorrow, shall we? Jennifer Benson tomorrow, 2 o'clock Central Standard Time. And Mars Robart, the director slash DJ, will be on the show Thursday at noon Central Standard Time. So without further ado, we're going to get Russ on the line. We're going to start talking about all his various projects. I'm so excited. This guy is, I'm telling you, he's a book of knowledge. So I'm excited to introduce my audience to him. Hi, Russ.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi. If you've been listening to my babble, you know that I couldn't call into my show. I saw you holding and I was trying to call in and they wouldn't let me go through. So here I am. Here we are. So
yeah,
it's a pleasure to meet you. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to try to do my best here. As I mentioned to my audience, I literally have not been talking for 24 hours just so I could talk on the show. I've been kind of whispering my way through everything, and I have this awful cold, so forgive me. I'm going to try to do as best as I can with what I have to work with here.
Are you okay?
So I want to I've been sick since Friday, and now it's on the tail end, but the problem is when you do radio – a sore throat slash losing your voice is probably not a good idea. It's just not, you know, so I've tried everything and I'm frustrated and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to whisper the whole time. And then when I go on radio, I'll talk and then I'll whisper again for the next 24 hours. And hopefully by Friday we'll be good. But thank you. I think we're going to be fine. Cause there's so much to talk to you about. I'm so excited. I want to talk about though, let's start off with talking about something simple. I know that you grew up, a portion of your time was spent growing up in Japan. I've never been out of the country except to go to Jamaica. So I want to talk a bit about your the Japanese side of you, if you will. I want to talk about how culture and the arts and diversity as it relates to that. How is it in a country like Japan versus coming to the United States? Is there more wealth of opportunity there? Talk to me a little bit about the culturistic part of Japan, if you would.
Oh, sure. It's a very different culture. it's a more homogenous society. Pretty much like everybody's Japanese for the most part. Here it's more, I guess, international in the sense cosmopolitan. Is that, I guess, would be the right term? Different ethnicities.
I gotcha.
over there, what can I say? I mean, it's a very beautiful culture. Everybody is, it's a very polite culture. It's a very, for a homogenous society, it's also very diverse too, in the sense that you could have the very technological kind of side of Japan, like Tokyo, if you go there, it's kind of like that, you know, very like high tech, electronic. But you could also go to a city like Kyoto, and it's very very historical, very cultural. If you ever seen the film like Memoirs of a Geisha, it's sort of like that.
Yes.
You know, it's just very serene. It's very calm. Or if you see the preview for that new film Ghost in the Shell, that could be Tokyo, you know. I mean, even like Blade Runner. I mean, it's like a dichotomy in a sense, you know, kind of like Occupants, you know, the film that I just did. It's like a dichotomy there. You have a real couple and a parallel couple. Well, same thing here. You know, you have two sides of Japan. And I think it's very fascinating. Because I toured Japan. You know, I backpacked all over Japan. And it's just, there's just so much to see. It's very beautiful. I had a fascination for castles, so I tried to see all the castles. I probably
didn't
catch all, but I did see quite a few. This is when I was like 20, you know. People back in Europe, I'm like, okay, let's backpack in Japan, because I happen to be over there for 1 year studying abroad, and I'm going, I'm going to do it. So that's what I did.
That's awesome. That's
yeah,
cool.
And I'm half
now,
Japanese. I'm half Japanese, by the way, and I'm half white. And my white side is, you know, we were here before the Revolutionary War in the United States.
Okay.
And then my Japanese, they're all from Japan. So, you know, for me, I have that juxtaposition, if you will, too, you know.
Sure. No, I totally get what you're talking about. I was curious the minute I saw that. I was like, I wonder if you have. Now, to the best of my knowledge, you've never shot anything in Japan, have you? Or you haven't done a short or anything of that nature in Japan directly? Or would you? I guess that was my key question was. It seemed logical to me that you would go there and you would actually shoot something, because it looks beautiful just from a bird's eye view. Meaning, I've never been there, obviously. It's just kind of peeking.
It's a very beautiful country. I would love to shoot there. Of course, there's logistics. I did shoot my student film when I was studying in Japan. I from 8th grade to 12th grade, I was at a school called Canadian Academy in Kobe, Japan. So for my senior project, I did a Star Trek fan film, if you will. It seems, I mean, by retrospect now, it seems it's not a very good film, but I guess it was good enough to get into the U.S. cinema program, the University of Southern California program. So I did shoot something, and that would be that Star Trek fan film. I shot that in Japan. Now, for a professional film, I would love to shoot in Japan. Of course, it's all about logistics and money.
Right, of course. Oh, of course. That's the other thing. It always makes that go round, especially when you're shooting in a location like that. Oh, my God, I can only imagine the expense. But it's a nice thought. I thought to myself, you know what, that would be totally, totally cool. Obviously, you know what I mean?
It would. Yeah, it would definitely be.
So since you brought it up, let's talk a bit about that film you were mentioning, Star Trek Hidden Identities, because I thought that that was neat. I'm not a Trekkie myself. So first of all, I often wonder, I'm like, I don't know why the hell people even want to do anything about Star Trek, because I just don't get it. But I was like, okay, so talk to me a little bit about the film and the driving motivation behind that, meaning were you a fan? Was this something that just – tell me the synopsis of the story first, because most people that are listening and have obviously, I'm gathering, not seen it.
No, because it's a student film. I mean, it was never meant to go public per se. Although we did have a quote unquote premiere at the school auditorium for people to see. So, you know, people did see it. It was my senior project. It took, it was something that you had to do over the whole year. And I had to take time, effort, and money, I guess, to create something. That was really the goal for all the senior projects. So I decided to do a film. And I love Star Trek. This is going to date me, but I own all episodes of The Next Generation on VHS. So,
oh, my God.
I'm a fan of Star Trek. I love Star Trek. It definitely... I like Gene Roddenberry's vision of a utopic future where everybody can get along. I mean, I think that's, one ideal about Star Trek, you know, and I'm an optimist. So it's like, for me, that I just like that vision, you know, and I grew up international.
Sure.
So, I mean, being in Japan, I went to an international school, Canadian Academy is an international school. So, I'm sorry. Now I'm coughing.
God, right. Now we're all sick on the radio. Great. Way to go. Yay. Okay, go ahead.
I have friends from many different nations and cultures. So, you know, I mean, it definitely influenced my life and my outlook.
Sure.
And Star Trek definitely fit that outlook. So, you know, I'm a big fan of Star Trek because of that vision. And that's why I did that. I call it a fan film. I guess it's a student film, you know.
Sure.
You know, this is back in 1995, so this is a good 22 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Now, I know that for folks that are always listening in that are contemplating, you know, going into things like film, going into doing, you know, production, et cetera. So if someone's listening in now, talk, if you would please, talk a bit about the differences, meaning in your mindset and also in your creativity and some of your vision. When you did that student film, if somebody's listening to you right now and thinking to themselves, you know what, maybe I want to try this. Maybe I want to shoot a little something. Is there something that you've obviously learned between doing Star Trek and then moving on and doing some of your own films? What's most pertinent do you think right off the bat when you're doing that first film that people need to remember that's going to get you out there, get you noticed?
You just have to go for it. And if you really love film, and for me, I got into film because of film music, specifically composer John Williams. I just love John Williams' music. His score for Jurassic Park really influenced me when I saw that in the theater. I was like 15. Of course, Superman, Star Wars, he's done quite a lot. But his music just, I get goosebumps. I could feel it. That's why that's why I make films. But yeah, I just didn't go for it. And you know what? Technology now is just so much better than it was 20 years ago. So, you know, you can shoot with your iPhone. You didn't have that 20 years ago. So, you know,
that's crazy.
Digital age. I made 4 feature films, right? I would not have been able to do any of those without the digital age. I mean, the digital age is amazing. Social media, you know, that's how we connected, right? You know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you know, using the iPhones, doing these Facebook live things, or, you know, I mean, Instagram, you can do that too. I mean, it's just transferring files, you know, like for occupants, we had visual effects, and I worked with a company in India and a guy in the Philippines, and the files are huge. I mean, these are visual effects files. You know, they're movie files, so they're massive. They have to be master resolution. So sometimes they're several gigs. You could not have transferred several gigs over the internet in 1995. It's just not possible. Johnny Mnemonic? Do you remember that film? Mnemonic with
Kennedy, I do.
Where he was able to store 320 gigabytes of data in his brain. And we're like, whoa, that's so much. But now it's like nothing.
Right?
So,
I mean, it's amazing to me. It's fascinating. Just the fact that a person can do a film on a phone just still blows my mind. I mean, I know it's possible. Right. I see it all the time. But every time I'm like, dude, seriously? Like, really? Seriously? It's amazing.
Yeah, I'd say to anybody listening, if they want to do a film, just go for it. I mean, it's just so much easier now than it was, you know, when I was growing up. So just do it.
Oh, sure. And
just
most people assume.
Yeah.
Well, and listen to this guy here. Now, Russ is saying this to you folks. You know, obviously you should go for it. And I agree wholeheartedly. I think a lot of it comes down to you should have a dream. You should have passion. You should believe in yourself. You should go after it, even if necessarily, like, for instance, you went to the University of Southern California. I know that you had a major in international relations and East Asian languages and cultures, and you had your minor in cinema and television. Because sometimes people are a little apprehensive about the idea of delving into an unknown field without having background or education. Now, having said that, since you did some of the work, you know, university work as far as studies and things like that, would you still encourage somebody out there to do this minus education? Because I know tons of people who do it, but some swear by, you know what, you got to have 8 degrees, et cetera. You follow me? So which side of the fence do you stand on that?
You don't need to go to film school. I mean, you can learn. I mean, on the internet, I'm sure there's like class. You know, what do you call it? You know, do it yourself kind of tutorials. No, I mean seriously. If you're like in high school or I don't know, maybe middle school, and you're listening, and you just shoot something and. Then, you know, it's probably not going to be perfect. I mean, my first films weren't perfect at all. I mean, no film is perfect, but, you know, you just learn from your mistakes. And, you know, I mean, look, even the film I just did is not perfect. So, you know, I mean, I'm still learning, and you will always learn. And I think I mentioned that Star Trek film I did, you know, in retrospect, it looks really bad. but, you know, I mean, you just have to just go for it and just keep honing your skills, you know, with every film that
I
you
agree.
Do.
No, yeah. Definitely, without a doubt, I would agree with that, definitely, because we always, on my show especially, I like to encourage people, just because you didn't finish this, didn't do this, just because you're this age, this, you know, ethnicity, et cetera, it shouldn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's the bottom line as far as that goes. Now, question for you.
Yeah.
I note that you're a man of many means, meaning that you don't just direct or you don't just do this or this. So I want to talk about Dr. Film Fix. That's what you call yourself, right? Or is that the name of the – I was going to say I came across this Dr. Film Fix because I know you do professional editing.
Yeah, I do that too. I mean, lately because of occupants, I've been more doing directing it. It's been – yeah, I mean, it's occupants as, I guess it's got to me directing gigs with a film called The Assassin's Apprentice by Paul Hickman and Collar by Troy Gavaldon. And then I'm working right now with Sean Kenny, Sean and Taki Kenny.
Okay.
Sean Kenny was Captain Pike in the Menagerie episode of Star Trek, the original Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
So, but it's, yeah, lately it's been, and that project's called Alien Cross, and we're actually going to be shooting this Kickstarter video on the 23rd with three other Star Trek actors. So, I do, of course, yes, I do other things on the side, like as you mentioned. If anybody wants some services, I'm here.
Well, that's the reason I brought it up, because I was going to say, hey, Ross, talk to us a bit about, tell us more in particular, like people that listen in, because obviously a good number of them I know at least own businesses or in the same field or need editing services. So tell us a little more specifically. Do you have specialties that you do in terms of the editing side of things? Are you multi-talented? Can you do multiple projects? Just give us all your offerings in terms of the editing side of things so people understand.
Well, I mean, I edited behind-the-scenes videos. I created trailers. It's really just a nuance. It's just something where, I guess you just feel it, whether it feels right or not. And, I seem to be able to do it, so.
Nice. Have you done sizzle reels before?
It's about pacing, and when it feels right, that's it's basically just a feeling. It's not subject, so it's just how, I think it feels like it feels right. This is the best way I can explain it.
Makes sense. And then would you say you have what percentage of time you're spending on the editing? Meaning, again, for instance, somebody's listening in, they want to approach you. How accessible are you time-wise to be able to take on new projects in that realm?
Right now, it's a little more difficult, I have to admit.
Okay.
Because the different directing gigs I've been getting. I'm a director first and foremost. And, again, because of occupants, it's definitely been a different dynamic since around maybe September or October of last year.
Sure.
It's changed.
Sure.
But I'm still here. I mean, I'm quite accessible on my website, which is russemm.com, russemm.com. So,
you bet. Well, but we want to throw that out there, obviously, because I know you've done that before. Are you still active in terms of web design? Because I know, too, that was really cool, because I'm like, he does web design, which is awesome. Probably because I need someone to help me with my own website. So I was just thinking, hey, I need a guy like him. But again, is it the same scenario? Are you finding you have less time to do things like that? Because I don't know how time-consuming web design really is, to be honest.
It depends on the complexity of the design. I've done one site that took 3 weeks. I've done another site, just a page. It takes maybe 2 days. So it really depends on the complexity of the site. I still do it. It's just, again, it's all about time factor.
Note to self, Cindy, don't ask Russ for about 6 months to help you with your website. Because I was thinking about that, and I'm like, oh, my God, he probably has no time for that, which I don't blame you, man. Toting a film is not an easy thing to do. I'm well aware. I see this all the time with my friends.
Well, I'll put it this way. This morning, the editor for Collar, Emil Harris, who happens to be my editor of choice for pretty much all my films, so shout out to Mr. Harris. But he just sent the second cut of Collar this morning, and I have yet to watch it.
He is busy, folks.
So, I understand. That's my schedule. you know. And also, you know, some of my other time, like next month, I have to travel to Idaho, and then Denver, Colorado, and then
oh my gosh,
and then Georgia for occupants, and you know,
right.
Basically they invited occupants at these various conventions or film festivals. So,
sure, of course,
you know, sometimes my schedule, because of occupants, it's, again, you know, a lot more traveling has been happening. And,
sure.
You know, a lot of these conventions or festivals are kind and gracious enough to give me lodging or airfare or
nice.
Stipend is the reason why I'm able to, you know, travel. Because it's very tiring. It's very grueling. It's very tough on my skin because I have eczema. So
that's not pretty.
Yeah. But you know, it's you know, you go in an airplane. You know, it's a lot of air conditioning, so it dries your skin, and you know, just,
sure.
just different climates. You know, right now the East Coast is, I think, being walloped by snow.
Oh, yes, yes. Just yesterday we got like 6 inches here or 8 inches or something like that, yep.
Oh, did you? Oh, boy.
Oh, God, yeah, it's pretty out there. I mean, it's pretty, but it's ugly.
I will not describe what it's like here in Huntington Beach, California.
I hate you. In a nice way, that sucks, doesn't it, folks? He's like, yeah, I'm in sunshine. Sucks to be you. Thanks a lot, Russ. No, I understand. I'm not jealous because eventually I'll be visiting Vegas soon. So I'm like, ah, too bad you folks. But no, I just wanted to give the folks an introspect in terms of, you know, are you capable of offering other services? You know, because it's nice to be able to do that, to go out there and say, hey, you know, I can help people out with this or this. And it's a nice side gig, obviously, because we all know independent film pays $300,000 a year, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm waiting.
Of course.
We're talking to a millionaire, folks. I know exactly how this works. But no, it's nice to be able to have those side projects and side jobs, obviously, because sometimes we all need that stuff in terms of keeping afloat if we're going to, you know, work on pursuing our dream while doing other stuff. So I totally get that. I have to say that I was completely jealous because you have worked with, and we're going to talk about this now, folks, he has worked with, let's see, one, two, at least three people that I know of that I like very much. So we're going to talk about the different films and the different people. First of all, I would like to talk about, I love this, the synopsis of this movie. This is a film about a man with multiple personalities. I feel like I'm a multiple personality person every day. And I'm like, you worked with John Hurd. Oh, my God, folks. You all know who John Hurd is, right? Amazing. The name of the film being PJ, of course. So we want to talk about PJ. Talk about this movie because it sounds so intriguing. I want to know more.
PJ. Okay, PJ was my first feature film that I ever did. This is back in 2006 when we filmed it.
Okay.
What can I say? Well, first off, it was the inception of the producer, Howard Nash. And a big shout out to Howard because Howard's the reason why I'm making feature films. So, you know, every feature film I did is with Howard. And so basically what happened was I had done a short film called Girl with Gun. And that was in 2004. And it basically got into a lot of festivals, won awards. It got into the San Diego Comic-Con, which was probably the highlight for that film. And because of that film, it garnered the attention of Howard. And Howard offered me the directing gift for PJ. And PJ already had a John Hurd, you know, who was, for people out there, the Home Alone dad. He was in Big. He was in Battlestar Galactica.
I love him.
Cutter's
he was
Way,
with Bette Midler in that one movie. Peaches. He was in Peaches. That's it.
He was in. That's right. You're right. Yeah, that's right. He also had worked with Howard in a film called Tracks. They did in 2005, I think, or 2004. And that had also Ice-T. And so they worked on a film together before PJ. So, PJ had John attached. Because of John, then it brought in Robert Picardo, who, you know, from Star Trek Voyager, Robert Picardo, basically he and I have worked on six films together. So since then, basically. Working with John, what can I say? John is amazing. I mean, he's definitely, he's a character in a good way. And when he approaches a character, I mean, it's just like he becomes that character. And it's amazing to see that transformation when you say action. He becomes Dr. Alan Shearer, which is the character he played. And, yeah, we shot in New York. I'm from Huntington Beach, so, you know, I was, basically living – I was like quote unquote homeless for 2 weeks, if you will, because that's when we shot December to January 20, 2006-2007. So the only days I had off were Christmas and New Year's, and I wasn't homeless. I was living at my brother's then girlfriend's place. Now they're husband and wife and two beautiful children. But back then, that's where I was staying. And yeah, those are the 2 days I had off were Christmas and New Year's. And I remember was it on New Year's? What was it? Like 5 minutes after the ball dropped, I fell asleep. I was really tired, but it was an amazing experience. We filmed on in Brooklyn and at the Williamsburg Bridge around there, and it had this beautiful view of Manhattan, of the the island, and we had this one shot in the film where John Hurt and Glynis O'Connor, who played his wife in the film, they were basically looking out over Manhattan during magic hour. Magic hour is when the sun is setting and it creates this beautiful orange hue. So it was like, it was magical, you know. It was a very wonderful experience, and I loved working with John. So that's what I got.
I'm so jealous. So jealous right now. I can't even stand it. I'm like, you've been in the presence of greatness more than once. Yeah, I'm still liking you a lot. Oh, now my question is, in terms of PJ, so if people listening to this, do they have access to it? Could they get access to it? Meaning, is it on Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, any place that we could find it online to watch it? Because I myself am intrigued to watch it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, you can go on Amazon Prime, and if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it right now. I guess you can rent it too. If you don't have Amazon Prime, you could rent it. If you go on Amazon.com or maybe even eBay or something, I'm sure there's actual DVDs, physical copies of the film. So yeah, it's out there.
Nice. I love it. I'm so excited. I'm still renting this. I'm definitely still renting this because I'm curious about it. It just sounds very intriguing, I'm not going to lie. And it's not just because it's you, but seriously, it sounds great. Now, on to guy number two. To those that listened in to me for the last how many years, you already know, I used to have an entire radio show where I interviewed the cast of Sons of Anarchy. Ryan Hurst, I did not interview, partly because he scares me. I'm not lying about this. Have you ever, to those listening in, have you looked at him? He's scary. Not lying. The man looks scary. And I'm like, oh, my God. So here comes Ross. Did a production called Behind the Green. So, of course, we want to talk about Behind the Green. And, of course, the experience with someone like that, because obviously Ryan Hurst, I remember him back in the day in that football movie. Remember that football movie from, like, ages ago? Obviously, leaping forward to Sons of Anarchy, et cetera. So how did you get connected with him? And then tell us a little bit about how this film in particular, I always like to ask filmmakers, did you – you as the filmmaker, do you have a partiality to like a PJ, Behind the Green? Is it something you haven't done yet? Have you found your magic film? That's what I call it, where the filmmaker says, I love this film.
Well, yeah, that's first off, Behind the Green is actually the behind the scenes documentary of the film Chasing the Green, which is the feature film that was Ryan Hurst was in that I directed. But Behind the Green, by the way, I edited that. So there you go.
Okay.
Well,
there you go.
I did the BTS videos for Chasing the Green also, but
nice.
No, Chasing the Green is the feature film with Ryan Hurst. It also has Jeremy London of Party of Five and William Devane, who was who was secretary in President Heller in 2004. And
I love William
Devane. Bill Devane is amazing, and you know he was directed by Alfred Hitchcock in Family Plot. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like I look up to Hitchcock, so it was like that was surreal. But getting back to Ryan, yeah, Ryan, by the way, he did not have that beard that he had in Sons of Anarchy and Chasing the Green. So he wasn't as imposing, but yeah, he is, he's a very imposing man. And he played the more, I guess, the darker brother, in the film. And no, he also was directed by Steven Spielberg.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it was Saving Private Ryan. He was in there, and I think it was directed by Kevin Costner in The Postman. So, you know, he's been directed by some great, amazing filmmakers. You know, as much as Bill Devane was directed by Alfred Hitchcock. You know, so you know, I only aspire to be, you know, at the level of Spielberg or, you know, Costner or Hitchcock. I really do. I mean, I think they're amazing. So, you know, I know, it was kind of intimidating, if you will, because they worked with these people. I'm just nobody. So, directing him, it was great. It was great. He had great ideas. Of course we, the way I direct actors is, I would, have rehearsals in pre-production. Pre-production is right before you start filming. On set, I give actors an entrance and an exit for every scene, just like in a play, because I think that's more natural. I tell them, look, if certain words you cannot say or it just doesn't feel natural because you're not used to saying it, then change it. As long as the story is still there, you know, change it so that you can say it in a more natural way, if you will. So that's like the advice I give to pretty much, you know, all my actors, if you will. And, you know, and that's how we worked. We filmed for what, 21 days, I think? 21 days. We were in New York again. We filmed in Westchester County, which is the county above the five boroughs. And we were in like White Plains and Croton on the Hudson, which is a great place. We filmed at a courthouse, Croton on the Hudson. I remember that. And it's a beautiful courtroom scene that we had. But yeah, it was a great experience. I love New York, and there's a very strong possibility, by the way, that I will be going back to film a feature called it's called The Whisper Project, but. And that's, again, with Howard, the producer. So it's a very possibility. I'm packing my bags for the summer.
That's awesome. I absolutely love it. I was going to mention that I know, obviously, that you have an affinity for New York, as do I, obviously. There's just something there's something so magical about New York City and shooting film there, and it's just such an experience. So kudos to you on that. I bet you enjoy that. Well, cross your fingers. We'll see. I always like to talk about non-professional things on my show, meaning that the people that are listening in should realize that Russ, actually, besides standing and directing a film, is actually a person too. He doesn't just produce and direct and edit. He's actually a live, real person with live, real likes. So there is some of the things that I know about him. First of all, congratulations, because I know you're a fan of the Chicago Cubs. A lot of my friends are Cubs fans, so of course you had an awesome season this year, which I thought was cool. So I saw that. I want you to explain to me, because it appears that you're a fan of Jared Leto. So explain this to me. I have a child who's 10. And I think he has a Joker obsession, and I mean the Jared Leto Joker. So I was going to ask you if you had seen Suicide Squad, because this child is like obsessed with this Joker, and I don't understand it. I mean, maybe I'm not. I mean, I'm not a big director, but I'm like, oh my God, he's scary and ridiculous. So tell me, as a director, have you seen the movie? And if you saw it, please tell me that you don't think it's like a well-made movie, because I don't understand the hype.
Well, first off, it's an Oscar-winning movie, right?
Well, technically, it won like some kind of thing.
For makeup. Yeah, personally, I thought it award should have got Star Trek, but that's just me. Yeah, but no, I actually saw Suicide Squad on the airplane to my occupants. Yeah.
Okay.
And it wasn't a bad film. I mean, it wasn't like a fantastic film, but it wasn't bad.
Okay.
It was okay.
Do you like his Joker? Because I know that some people stand on different sides of the fence. Because I remember Dallas Buyers Club, so I'm still stuck with Jared Leto in that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
so it's hard.
Jared in that film was really, really, he was good. I mean, there's a reason why he won the Oscar. But yeah, you know, right. For me, Joker, honestly, I grew up with a Jack Nicholson's Joker. That's my Joker.
Right.
So
right,
hard
exactly.
For me to, you know, it's a very different Joker that Jared did. And I'm not saying it's bad, but I think, how would I put it? Jack Nicholson's Joker was more comical. Heath Ledger's Joker was definitely serious. And I think Jared's Joker was maniacal, maybe would be the best way to put it. I mean, it was crazy.
Right.
It's a different interpretation of the Joker, you know.
Right.
But again, because of my childhood, I will always go to Jack Nicholson's Joker.
Amen to that one. I'm still using that line with my kid today. He just gets so defensive. He's like, oh, my God, he's like the best Joker in the world. I've seen this movie. He makes me watch it. Like, literally, I've seen it 8 times. I'm so out of Suicide Squad, I can't even stand it anymore. I'm like, oh, my God, okay, fine. So some more things that I know that you like. This is awesome. He's a Sinatra and a Dean Martin fan. Anybody who says that they like Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra is welcome on my show every day because those are like my two top favorites. I actually interviewed Deanna Martin, Dean Martin's daughter. Oh, my God, was she lovely. I imagine as lovely as her father would have been, which is awesome. I mean, she is top-notch class act, just like her father. Oh, my God, it was amazing. I love that you love Maleficent because she's like the most badass woman on film I've ever seen. So I'm like, that was amazing. And I just watched The Sixth Sense the other day. But here's what I want to ask you because I know that you are a Game of Thrones fan. I keep asking people this because I'm not. What is it? Okay, it's like The Walking Dead too. I'm like, why do you people watch this? So help me understand why people sit in front of a TV and watch Game of Thrones. I don't get it. Okay, what is it?
Well, first off, I read all the novels, and so, you know, I'm a fan of the books, so I was curious to see what they would do. I think it's been meandering a little, you know, in the latter seasons, but that's because George R. R. Martin. So the showrunners have to go on their own. That's my opinion. But it has an amazing title sequence. I love the music, and I just love how they present it. I love the characters. I just love following them. You know, I think they're you know, whether it's Daenerys Targaryen or Jon Snow, it's just an amazing, I guess, milieu of characters. And by the way, if you really, really love the Game of Thrones, listen to Patrick Spanagle. If you go on Facebook, look up Pat Spanagle, and he does his podcast on Game of Thrones. So he's a bigger Game of Thrones fan than I. And I only mention him because he and his wife Lisa, they were kind and gracious enough to house me when I was over there for the DC Independent Film Festival about a month
ago.
And they're wonderful
Very
people.
Nice.
So. Yeah, I met them last year. Was it last year? No, 2 years ago now, at a Farpoint convention. The first time, and they saw Occupant. And since then, we've been friends. And you know, I also met some other wonderful people there, like Mark E. and Lakita Edwards. But yeah, I met Pat, who's a big Game of Thrones fan. So seriously, anybody out there listening to his podcast, you love Game of Thrones, listen to that. I'm looking forward to the season. It's kind of sad that it's ending, but, you know, I mean, all good things must come to an end, right?
Well, right, of course. And you know what? We all know that I think if anything gets overdone, like I was just saying this to somebody, I don't know if you're a fan, but obviously they did Kong again. So now it's Kong Skull Island. And I was just saying to people, that's my question to you. As a filmmaker, really, let's say, for instance, you have like The Assassin's Apprentice and let's say it takes off, right? And then you say, okay, every year I'm going to keep making it. Why can't a classic stay a classic? Do you know what I'm saying? And I know I have my own films. I'm just a tiny person. I don't really direct. But do you know what I mean? At what point does cinema turn away from being a classic and become more cliche by doing it again and again and again? You know what I mean?
Yeah, there is that argument. And I was afraid, by the way, with Rogue One for Star Wars, that would happen. But Rogue One was a really well-done film, so I'm looking forward to Episode 8. But there is a point, like The X-Files, I'm a big fan of The X-Files, but the latter seasons of the original run, they were a little convoluted, I guess would be the way to put it. It just, you know, didn't feel like X-Files anymore. So, you know, and what's the thing? Jump the Shark? Or Nuke the Fridge. You know, at some point, Jump the Shark, I think, was a phrase on the Fonz and Happy Days. He jumped the shark. And at that point, it veered into the ridiculous. And I think at some point, you know, all good things just must come to an end. Like, I was very happy to start Next Generation ended after seven seasons. It just felt right, you know. I mean, if it had kept going on, I think it would have been a little, it would have stretched. It would have been too much of a stretch. So with the new Kong, I have not seen it, although I've heard, you know, people like it. So I may see it. I don't know.
That's what I'm hearing, too. I just thought, well, yeah, it's over and over and over and over again. I'm like, what happened with the last one? I like the last one. I'm like, why do we got to do it again? The last one was good. You know what I'm saying?
The last one was, I think, Peter Jack and Kong?
Yeah.
Is there one?
Yeah, that's right. That was legit. I think, oh, crap. See, now you're making me think about, damn it, we're not talking about this anymore. It just frustrates me because I'm like, seriously? The last one had great special effects. Adrian Brody was in it. Jack Black was in it. It was well done. I don't know if I like the chick that played the one necessarily, but it was just a good film. That's why I'm like, you know what? Can't you just leave it at a good film? You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying about that
one. I think it was Naomi Watts, I think, was...
Yeah, that's it, Naomi Watts. For some reason, I was struggling with her being the lead. Don't ask me why. It wasn't a fit for me, but I'm like the rest of them. I think the effects were great. I think the story went well. I think it was good. It's just that simple. So I guess we'll just see how Kong is.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I mentioned how X-Files got a little convoluted in the latter seasons. Well, guess what? I enjoyed the new season, season 10 that just came out last year, and I look forward to season 11.
Uh-huh.
So there is a way that a show can, I guess, reinvent itself, and X-Files was able to do that. So I'm very happy about that.
I hear
you. And, you know, Twin Peaks is coming back for season 3. I'm looking
forward
to that. Yeah,
I heard. That's going to be awesome.
You know, I'm actually – it's very subjective. You know, I mean, at some point, yeah, you can jump the shark, but at the same time, you can reinvent also. So, you know, I mean, I oscillate, I guess, between, you know, the pros and cons of things. If that's a good way to put it.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. That is exactly right. The other two things that I know about you is, to the best of my knowledge, you're not married. And I ask this because there's always people creeping on my pages, means they're looking at me and then they're looking at you. So at least one person I know said, hey, he's not bad looking. So we just want to confirm, in case big director guy here isn't single, that I'm not putting my foot in my mouth.
Well, right now I'm single, but, you know, honestly, making films is just very time consuming.
Right. I know exactly
so
what you're talking about.
For very much else besides filmmaking. So for me, all my films are like my children. That's how I kind of look at it right now.
Gotcha.
You know, my brother, Chris, has beautiful family. But you know, it's a lot of energy and a lot of effort and a lot of love.
Oh, I
bet.
Into that. Of course.
I don't know if I can do that. You know, and it's not fair to anybody else if I'm, you know, can't put my full energy into something. That's how I look at it anyway. So you know,
that's a great attitude, actually.
Yeah, my life has gotten even more, I guess, complicated with the new films and everything. So that's where I am right now. So
okay. So ladies, don't hit on him apparently, because it's just going to be a no-go. But that's okay. We have to throw that out there just in case. But what I thought was really super neat, and I don't come across as much as, and I'm assuming you still have time for this, but you're a coin collector, yes? I thought that was really neat.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, he's a coin collector. But do you get to do that?
I
mean, because you're so busy.
Yeah. It's a hobby that my grandmother started, my late grandmother, on my paternal side.
Aww.
She collected 1 cent coins, and I pretty much continue it because I think it's very fascinating. The reason when I say 1 cent, they're American 1 cent. And the reason I collect American 1 cent coins is because, unlike the other denominations, it only had 1 year where it wasn't minted. The other coins, they had several years. So for me, it's like it's continuous since 1793, which is when, and the penny and the half cent, there was a half cent and a cent. These are large cents, you know, back then they had, it was different. But it's just very fascinating. The 1 cent coin, it was one of the first coins ever minted by the U.S. Mint. And maybe George Washington held it. Maybe one of the founding fathers held some of the coins that I have.
Wow.
I mean, I a lot of history there. And, you know, I mean, back then, it's they had, the goddess Liberty was on the coin. Liberty, like Libertas. It was from the French.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, Lady Liberty was on all the coins, unlike today. It's, you know, it's changed. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
so different.
Just that Yeah, it just said on the back, 1 cent and United States of America. That's it. That was the coin.
Wow.
You know, that's literally what the coin was. It says, you know, I mean, it was so different. I think George Washington probably would be rolling in his grave knowing that his portrait on the quarter, because he specifically told the coin makers back then, do not put my face on the coin, because it's too much like the monarchy of Britain.
So, oh, my gosh.
Now, that's the history of coins. So I collect it because I love history, right? And you're able to see that history in the coinage, and I think it's fascinating. And by the way, I think the 1 cent coins are beautiful, and it's changed over the years. So it started with large cents, then in 1857, in 1857, by an act of Congress, they made the pennies that we have today. But back then, it was like the Flying Eagle. They became the Indian Head. Then it became the Lincoln coin that we have today. So. You know, you just see all that history. It's amazing. I mean, like in 1943, there was a steel cent. You know why it was steel in 1943? Because the U.S. needed the copper for the war effort. You see, history.
Oh, my
it's
gosh.
That's there.
Fascinating.
So you get to just see it even to the present day, and it's still being minted. And I hope it's still going to be minted, even though, like, Canada, they got rid of their penny. I hope we don't get rid of ours.
I didn't know that. Oh, my God. Don't even go there. Don't say things like, oh, my God. I can't even imagine that. Could you imagine? I don't want to even think about it. That's a neat hobby to have, especially if it's passed down. My God.
But yeah,
well, it's nice to see that hobby is still going around, because, to be honest with you, I've only met a couple in my lifetime that have done something like that. But I think it's extraordinary to invest your time and your efforts into something like that. That's a neat hobby to have, definitely. Now, I just want to sing your praises for a moment here. Folks that are listening in, just so you know, his productions have received awards at the following places. Now, just listen to this. Hollywood DV Festival, the Miami Underground Film Festival, the New Jersey International Film Festival, Canada International Film Festival, World Fear Houston, South California Film Festival, the 2015 Action On Film Festival. Do you know what that means? You know what the hell you're doing. That's impressive. You know why? Because some people don't know what the hell they're doing in this industry. I didn't just say that out loud. Yes, I did. It's a medication. But that right there is a sign. First of all, people are noticing your work. And they're noticing it not just because it's a good production, but also all the components. I think people tend to forget a film is not made just for the director standing there. It's a combination of directors, actors, DPs, camera people, wardrobes, props, the whole nine yards. So the art of film is not just that. So kudos to you on being recognized in all those different places. Now, I want to get to talking about occupants first. But first, before you talk about the film itself, I want to know how the premiere went at Pasadena International Film Festival, because you were just there, right?
Yeah. And it's still going on, this festival. So anybody who wants to see one of the films, it's still going on, the festival. And
okay.
It's going to go on Thursday.
Okay.
And I plan to go either today or tomorrow, just to see. I like to see other filmmakers' films. For my premiere, I guess, yeah, it was a premiere. I was last Thursday at, I think, 8:30 p.m. It went well. I mean, people liked it. We were grouped with another film, which is also a wonderful film. It was a good crowd. I mean, it was near full house, and you know, people had excellent questions, and yeah, it was great. I like it when, you know, people enjoy the film, you know, and are entertained, mm-hmm. because it's entertainment, right? And so, you know, it makes
yes.
me happy when they laugh at the right moments, or they gasp at the, you know, the right moments. And when I say gasp, because this veers into horror. You mentioned which film I like best. Occugood. It feels right. And,
really?
Yeah, and it's kudos to the screenwriter, Julia Camera. She's the one who created, you know, the script. She wrote the script. It's her script. And Howard Nash, you know, optioned her script. And since I've been working with Howard on, PJ, Chasing the Green, The Legends of Mathia,
right.
which is also one film with Robert Picardo. It's like a Princess Bride type story. With Occupants, you know, we got wonderful actors. Robert Picardo came back, But also Brianna White played Annie in the Parallel Annie.
Yes.
And Michael Pagliacci played Neil in Parallel Neil. And they won awards for their performance. And so they're up for a nomination at the Utah Film Awards coming up. And so is Bob Picardo, which I'm very happy about. But, yeah, you know, it's won a lot of awards. And it's just, you know, kudos to Julia. She's won an award. Kudos to the actors. You know,
sure.
Just kudos to the editor and the DP. And, you know, editor won an award. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a really good team and really good. It just worked. It worked very well. So, you know, I was just very happy that, you know, people are enjoying the film at like the Pasadena International Film Festival.
Right.
You know, it just makes me very grateful that people like this film. So.
Well, and I was going to mention that you have an ongoing working relationship with Robert as well. And I was wondering about the chemistry between you and he and how you formed this working relationship. I haven't met him, but he looks like an incredible actor. And I thought to myself, well, I know other directors that have a kinship with some of the actors that they use, and then they continue to use them again and again and again. So I'm just curious about Robert's talent in terms of what makes you want to pick him and use him and put him in films that you produce.
Well, he's a great actor. I mean, this guy has been, he's worked with some great directors like Joe Dante.
Okay.
You know, he's pretty much all of his films, you know, Inner Space, The Birds.
Mm-hmm.
He's worked with Paul Verhoeven, Total Recall. You know, he was a cast regular on Star Trek Voyager for 7 seasons from 1995 to 2001. And he's worked on shows like Wonder Years.
Right.
You know, he wanted. Got a nomination, an Emmy nomination for his performance as a gym coach. You know, he's a great actor, and it's just such a pleasure to work with him. And, you know, I was just so happy that he got a nomination for, you know, for Occupants, because it's such a great performance. And he just brings his, I guess his, you know, his resume to any production. And he actually cares for the role, and he works with the other actors, and he likes to rehearse with them, and, you know, he likes to make sure that, you know, the script, basically his dialogue makes, you know, 100% sense. And of course, you know, he would offer suggestions, because, you know, I mean, this mm-hmm. is a guy who's been, you know, acting for a good several decades, so he has a lot of a lot of talent, a lot of notes, or I don't know what the right word would be, but, you know, he's basically, he's been there, done that. So, you know, he has really good suggestions, and then, yeah, we talk about it, like for Occupants, that's what I did. You know, he was there. So were the other two actors, even though they weren't physically acting with him, because, you know, they were talking to him in the film, via a web chat. However, I wanted them there because I wanted that performance to be natural, and it would not have been if they were not there to interact with him. So literally when we filmed his scene, we filmed in the bedroom of the house that we got, and it was in front of a green screen. And then the room was so small, they were in the closet.
Oh, wow.
and the camera was, you know, also there, because there just wasn't a lot of space. So they were, like, saying the lines in the closet, and, you know, Bob was interacting with them. And
oh, my God,
I
really?
That it worked. I mean, it worked. It worked really well, and a lot of people have said that. But honestly, if they were not there, I don't know if the performances would have been the same. So,
I imagine. Well, and I've looked at Robert before, too, and I'm like, I don't know, maybe it's just you or us, but he's scary looking, too, sometimes. I'm like, you must really like these scary looking guys, because I'm like, they're all very intense and serious. And I'm like, apparently you gravitate to that, which is fine, but I was like, oh, my God, I could not be on a set with these people. It would be kind of maddening and a little scary and all that good stuff. But, you know, it works. The best directors pick the best people to work with, not only for the chemistry that they have, but obviously for the performance that they bring, certainly. So I'm curious to ask, when you mentioned, of course, your favorite being Occupants, tell us why this is your so-called swan song, meaning that your preferred film, of course, and why do you believe that it's doing so well on the film circuit, in your opinion?
Well, first off, I hope it's not my swan song. That means this is my last film.
I need to get off the sauce here. Gosh.
I got to quote Akira Kurosawa, who made his last film, was called Maradayo.
Oh,
no, I'm still here. That's
Swan song. Way to go, Sydney. Let's scratch that one. So tell us why this is your favorite film. See, that's applicable. Because I'm curious. I want to know what it is about Occupants.
I just love the concept of a multiverse, a parallel universe, but not just one, but, you know, infinite numbers, basically. And the fact that there's a duplicate of yourself, or multiple duplicates. But imagine your parallel self is a psychopath. Does that mean that you are a psychopath? You see? And suddenly it becomes very uncomfortable. And that's what this film is about. It makes you question yourself. And I like that. I told you that I'm half Japanese, half white. So I know about dichotomy.
Right.
I know about duality. You know, I've been in two different cultures, as we mentioned at the beginning of the interview, Japan versus the United States. They're very different cultures. So I understand that. So, you know, when I approached Occupants, it totally made sense to me. You have real Annie and Neil and parallel Annie and Neil. But guess what? They're both the genuine article. They just had different life experiences. And so it's like taking that duality and splitting it into two. And what happens is, you know, this is like it's a found footage film. So, you know, my inspiration, well, I guess, was like Cloverfield, because they did a lot of transmedia in that film with the viral marketing, which we did for Occupants. So I'll explain that in a little bit. But, you know, the Blair Witch Project, of course, started this found footage craze, if you will. But we wanted a fresh spin on it. And a lot of people said that we were able to achieve that. And one thing I did not want to do, like in Cloverfield, is have jerky camera movement, because it made my friend Neely, when we saw that film, made her sick. It made a lot of people sick. So we were – our movements are more calm, if you will. And we were purposely did that. And Cloverfield, it's a great film. I'm just saying that it made people sick, you know. Not me, but some other people. Because of motion.
Oh, right, no.
So, but one thing I loved about Cloverfield is just the way they did the viral marketing with the Slushio Cola and Taraguto, that Japanese corporation we bring back to Japan. But they did that, and they made these viral videos, and you had to surf the web to find it. So, for us, we did the same thing. So it's a found footage film, then it veers to science fiction and becomes pure horror, which is why it won the top prize, the best science sci-fi feature film award at Shriekfest, which was something amazing, by the way. You know, shout out to Denise Gossett, the festival founder and director of Shriekfest, because never thought we would win that prize. I mean, that's like winning the lottery. But yeah, anyway, I'm veering. So with Occupants, the reason I like it, and yeah, there's a lot of information, by the way, talk about Occupants for hours. So I can babble. I won't babble. But about Occupants, you know, it was the Peterson Research Institute who put together this footage, and Dr. Peterson is Robert Picardo. We have a Peterson Research Institute site, PRI-research.info. We also have a comic book tie-in to the film, drawn by a DC Marvel Comics artist, Dave Beatty. Takes place during Act 1 and 2 of the feature film. Then we have the feature film. Now we have a sequel being written by Julia Camera, you know, the writer of the first film. And she's 30 pages into it yesterday. So is this my favorite film? It's because there's so much potential. It's because the first film was well-received, and it seems to be a lot of support, and people want to know. They care for these characters. They want to know what happens after this. And, you know, for me, you know, I think franchising is very, very interesting. You know, we talked about going too far. Well, I honestly think that if you can expand the storyline, I think that's very fascinating. It's like building a puzzle. you know, so, or like coin collecting, you know, you just keep adding and adding and adding, see, you know, where we can take occupants, for occupants two, maybe occupants three, because with the multiverse, you have literally an infinite number of possibilities that you can go. So
I
you introduce the universe one in occupants. Well, guess what? You're going to introduce parallel universe two in occupants two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's my favorite film, because there's so much potential and people, it has been, it's been received very well by people, if you will. You know, they want to know what happens. And it's also the film that's keeping me busy, if you will. I mean, I love my other films, but this film seems to have, I guess, hit the jackpot, if you will. So
I gotcha.
I'm very,
and that's exciting.
Very yeah. So.
And I don't.
With,
well, and that, and one of the things I wanted to say, of course, too, is once you get involved in the circuit, like you said, you're at Pasadena International Film Festival. Then on the 20th, you leap over from the 20th to the 26th. I know that it's premiering at the Russian International Horror Film Festival and Awards.
Yeah.
Plus, you're going to be at the Toronto International Spring of Horror and Fantasy Film Festival in April, from the April 7th to the 9th. So I know that there's a lot of jumping around and going here to going here. And it's exciting. I mean, I'm very excited for you. That's just that whole experience of making the film and then seeing that audience and watching their reaction and knowing that it's being so well received. It's exciting. Of course, I mean, who wouldn't, you know, be thrilled about something like that? So kudos. But we don't want to forget about the Assassin's Apprentice, because that's important. That's the whole reason you and I met, actually, was that film.
Because of Assassin's. And I want to do a major shout out to everybody who contributed to our Indiegogo campaign.
Yeah.
Because you got over $10,000, and our original goal was $6,200.
Wow.
Don't think that this money won't go to waste. It will not. We need that money.
Sure.
So you don't know how grateful I am that, you know, and you too, yours truly, Cindy. Thank you. But yeah,
I haven't done anything except put you on radio yet. The rest is to be determined.
Well,
but go ahead.
You know,
thank
honestly,
you.
No. I'm telling you right now, what you're doing for me right now, it's like you're giving me publicity, and I appreciate it. You don't know how much I appreciate
it. Thank
you
so much. That's so kind of you.
Oh, no, no.
Thank you.
No,
it's
thank
my
you.
Pleasure. Oh, my God. Look at this. Thank you, Fast. Okay, about Assassin's
Apprentice.
We can go
thank yous all day long.
I know,
but
right? We should talk about that.
But Assassin's Apprentice, it only has Robert Picardo. It also has Tara Page, is a renowned stunt actress, Tara Page. She was like in Alice in Wonderland in the Transformers Age of Extinction. And guess what? She's a really good actor. So I'm very happy that she's in the role of Kaylee. Yep, she's Kaylee in this film. And guess what? We're doing parkour in this freestyle running.
Okay.
And she does a lot of running, and she does her own stunts, and she's amazing. She's tireless. She climbs walls. She literally jumps fences. Literally, I'm telling you, she's jumping fences in this film. She's like going over cars. We just did pickup shots with her like a couple weeks ago. And you know, Paul Hickman is the one who wrote this, and he started this this project. And
shout out
like,
to Paul Hickman.
Oh, big shout out to Paul Hickman. And we also have Marina Sirtis with Counselor Troy in Star Trek to the Next Generation. So you know, I mean, just to work with. Amazing for me. But yeah, basically this film we wanted to herald a trilogy. We have a trilogy, a movie trilogy in mind, and also a video game. So there's a lot of possibilities with the Assassin's Apprentice. And right now I'm working with Paul. We're in post-production right now on the film. So that's why we did that Indiegogo post campaign, because we're going to have this Foley done by this amazing company named Juniper Post. They won an Emmy for a James Cameron production. It was a documentary. It's like 10 years before. And Foley is like footsteps and, you know, like cloth effects and all that. And in a film like Assassin's Apprentice, you have a lot of running, you have a lot of action. Well, you need that Foley. So, you know, a substantial portion of that money that we raise is going to go for Foley. Visual effects. We have visual effects work, you know, there's going to be like a Google-style glass where you get to see, you know, images in it, and that's visual effects right there. There's other shots like drones. We have drones in the film, real drones, prop drones.
Oh, my God.
So it's like, you know, I mean, that's where we are in the project right now. I think our editor, Emil Harris, I mentioned him many, many times because Emil Harris and I have worked on every single production. But Emil Harris is going to provide the second cut of the film in a couple of days. So that's where we are with him.
That's awesome. And I'm excited. I'm just excited.
Yeah.
See, he's got something else coming out. And we don't want to forget to talk about this. I know of, obviously, the Dollhouse you have not shot as of yet, right? You're going to be headed to Ohio for that one. So I gather that that's one that's in the hopper, one of four, actually, I have listed here.
The Dollhouse would be in Ohio. And right now, again, the script is being written by Emil Harris. He's a really good writer.
Good deal.
We're aiming for summer. And basically it's a horror feature about a dollhouse. There's not much I can say about it because otherwise it'll give away the story.
I was just going to say, I'm probably not going to press you too hard there, but that's creepy.
Yeah.
Just the idea of dolls.
Exactly. And the producer is Julie Del Losio, and she lives in Macedonia. So right now we're working on that, and the script is very close to being completed. But that's where we are with that project. Yeah.
Okay. And then
you know,
A Girl with Gun.
Yeah.
Now is that's still being worked on, or we're looking for that soon too?
Girl with Gun, the feature, that's something that's like a passion project, but that will involve the very, very big budget. So hopefully, you know, you see a lot of projects, the way it works is a lot of them are in development, if you will, until you're able to get financing. And at that point, then you're able to make that project. So
right.
I just did a film Holler with the producer Troy Gabaldon and actor Sean Gunnell, Michael Ray, and Denise Gossett and Jennifer Durst. So that was our cast. And, you know, our DP is Ray Carwell. And it was a great project. But guess what? The money was there. So that's why we were able to shoot it. And it's a very good concept piece. I mean, it's I can't really say too much, but let's just say it involves a vigilante priest. There you go.
Oh,
I will say.
See, he's giving us teasers here. This is exciting. Oh, my God. We got teasers in the middle of the afternoon. This is awesome.
The tagline is, not all sins can be forgiven.
Dun, 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 dun. And you can feel that dark music is coming.
Yeah.
So now, my biggest question.
Project,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I was just saying that's why with projects, you know, it's financing. Financing is a major factor. And one thing about Occupants, it has helped to spearhead that. So I'm definitely on board for any production with the financing is in place. You know, give my 150% all. And I love making films, and you know, I'm just very grateful that people would think of me to be able to direct whichever project it is. So, you know, I want to direct all of them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Of course, Rome wasn't built in a day, obviously, and you have to have time to do all sorts of other things, but you know, you've got a terrific thing going here. I mean, 20 is director, 29 is producer. You've got all this stuff in the hopper. I also noticed that you did not cast one of my top favorite people of all time in the entire world. Ouch. I was driving in the car today, and I'm like, oh, I got to ask him this question. Because, you know, I have this – I'm very partial to Michael Madsen. Anybody who knows me, and I know you haven't been friends with me long, but that's my big thing is Michael Madsen. He's, like, my top five actor Teal. Like, you know how you got your top five favorite? He's, like, in my top five period of everything. And I'm like – I'm always pointing out to people, like, oh, I love how you book Michael Madsen. Or I'm like, oh, I see you didn't do a film with Michael Madsen. He is kind of cool. Just my thought. I'm just kind of throwing it out there in case you ever – looking for an actor.
Michael Madsen is very, very, very cool, and as well as his sister, Virginia, and I would love to.
I know, I love her too. I know,
and by
right?
The way, Virginia,
that's what I'm talking about.
His sister worked on Star Trek, so there you go.
Oh my God, how ironic is that, right? That's awesome. gosh. Look at that.
It's all tied together to Star Trek somehow. It always ties together to Star Trek. But, yeah, I would love to work with Mr.
Okay, Matthews. that's kind of creepy for that whole Star Trek thing you got going on. But I'm going to leave you like that because, you know what, some people are just into that, and that's okay. I don't understand it, but we're all right. That's absolutely fine. Now, I want to read off a bunch of different ways to find you. When I get done, you can let me know if I've missed anything. I've tried really hard not to, but just listen to all this stuff, and then when I get done, you can correct me if I miss anything. Russ's website is obviously, as he mentioned, russem.com. The movie website being gotmovieshow.com. He has a profile on IMDb. He has a Facebook personal page, and his last name, by the way, folks, is Emmanuel, which is E-M-A-N-U-E-L. He also has a Facebook for TAA Movie. He's on YouTube. The Occupants website is occupantsthemovie.com. That's the film we've been talking about, folks. So anybody who's out in Pasadena, you can go to the International Film Festival and see it, or check it out at the Russian International Horror Film Festival on March 20th through the 26th, or at Toronto International Spring of Horror and Fantasy Film Festival from April 7th to 9th. He's on Vimeo. He is on LinkedIn. And again, with the Facebook, we've got Chasing the Green, the Dollhouse, as well as the is it the Collar Movie? Did I get that correct?
Yes. That's
okay.
Correct.
What am I missing? Because you're like everywhere.
Well, first, Got Movie Show is Paul Hickman's show.
Oh.
So,
I apologize.
Right now, but no. It's something I was interviewed by Paul. So.
Got it.
Yeah. Shout out to Paul again.
Okay.
But yeah, basically,
yes, I will make a note of that.
If you want to see anything I've done, just go to russem.com. The first page,
okay,
eight posters, and just click on any of those posters, or just go into the site itself, and basically you're able to see everything. So, yeah, you're right. I've done several films, and it's honestly going to take forever to list them. But they're you know,
right,
whether it's Collar, Assassin's Apprentice, and Saya, Girl with Gun, Chasing the Green, Restoration of Paradise, the documentary I did on the Bolsa Chica Wetlands. It's all there. I mean, please, if you're interested, please have a look. And, please contact me.
Or go to the film festival. Or find him,
or
obviously, on Facebook and other places. Yes, that's exactly right. And I do hope you guys are going to make your way around to my film festival in June, because, you know, my festival is coming up in New York and part of June, or June 23rd. I had to think a minute. June 23rd to 25th, I'll be in New York City having my film festival. So you are more than welcome to come. Come to my festival, come and visit, see the films, be a panelist if you'd like. Oh, my God, I would love to have you on my director panel. That would be awesome. Huge directors, well, I call them huge in my own mind because they're fascinating and they're wonderful and they're the best in their craft. So I'd be more than happy to extend an invitation to you to come, especially if you're going to be in New York. You have to come. Come there with the film. Don't come there with the film. Just come for the panel. Come just to see whatever. I would absolutely love that because you're very engaging and very enchanting and you're very easy to listen to. And I'm sure that my listening audience that comes to attend the festival would reap such a benefit from your knowledge. You wouldn't believe it. So definitely, please consider that, obviously.
Thank you.
Without a doubt. Of course. And I'll be watching your progress, obviously. Hopefully, I've done you justice outside of I'm so mad at myself. I pride myself on doing such good work and journalism, and here I made all these mistakes today. See, I have to get off the cold medication, or, like, don't do shows when you're sick. See, folks, this is what happens. I try to work when I'm sick. Now I have no voice either. But I got the show in. So I'm like, okay, hopefully I did you justice. The show
you did.
Archived. You think? Oh, I hope so. 2 hours, and the show
sure.
will be archived.
You did so much research
so.
On me. Some things I even forgot.
Oh, my God. Well, that's my job, dear. I'm supposed to do that. But, no, I get so frustrated with myself. You know how it is in your own occupation, because you, like, think to yourself, okay, I set myself at this bar. And then when something goes wrong, you're like, okay, just because I'm sick doesn't mean it should go wrong. You know what I'm saying? So you're like, you know what? It gets frustrating. So thank you for being such a good guest and sharing your time with us and sharing your experience with us. I'll be watching you certainly, and keep me posted about my festival, of course. And certainly the door is always open for you to come back. Anytime you want to promote something, please do come back and visit us again. I would love that. And now I'm going to go die before my voice goes, because I can feel it going already, but I appreciate you taking the time. Please don't be a stranger though. I would love it to have you come back. Definitely in one form or another,
physical,
or radio or both.
Thank you, Cindy. And please get better.
I'm going to try. I'm trying to rest, but it's hard. I have kids at home and a career. You know how this is, the rushing, rushing, rushing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back to silence today. I'm going to whisper all day and all night tomorrow. Hopefully tomorrow's show I'll get a little better. And I'm seeing a doctor tomorrow, so I may get some good antibiotic drugs. That'll help. But thank you for the well wishes. I appreciate that.
No, of course. Of course. I felt bad that you were talking for so long.
Surprised. I can go up to 2 hours on the show. But no, I wanted to do you proper justice, definitely. So thank you. And like
you
I said, 2 hours it'll be archived. Stay in touch about the festival and let me know. And good luck. I'll be crossing my fingers for occupants for you and especially for Assassin's Apprentice too.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Cindy.
All right, dear. Have a great afternoon. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, let's hope with any luck at all that, A, I don't sound as terrible as I feel right now. Oh, my God. And let's hope that you all forgot that I made a couple of mistakes. Oh, embarrassing, because we all know that I try so hard not to. Again, thank you so much to Russ Emanuel for his courtesy and for his patience and understanding. Thank you, folks in my listening audience, for actually listening to me when I sound like this. Oh, my gosh. Let me do the rundown again here for you. Russ Emanuel. Last name again spelled E-M-A-N-U-E-L. He's on Facebook and has a personal page, as well as his films, Occupants, Chasing the Green, The Collar Movie, and The Dollhouse. He's on YouTube, Vimeo, LinkedIn. He has an IMDb profile. The Occupants website is occupantsthemovie.com, and his actual website is russem.com. And I would suggest you go right to that website because obviously, of course, that's where he's going to be listing all of his films and information and progress in terms of film festivals, places that you want to go to see his productions, etc. And last but not least, before I try to stop talking for a while, I do not want to be negligent and forget about thanking the one person who is completely responsible for this, which is, of course, the lovely and wonderful Paul Hickman. If it wasn't for you, Paul, reaching out to me and saying, hey, I think you should interview this gentleman and talk about this project we did, he would have never made it on the show. So to you, my dear Paul, feel free to know that you are welcome on the show anytime and much appreciation for bringing him. He was an absolutely wonderful guest. One more time, I don't want to forget to remind everybody, Ignescent Music front lady Jennifer Benson is on the show tomorrow, 2 o'clock Central Standard Time. Thanks again to everybody for listening in. I need to go rest and take it easy before I hit my kiddos. Talk to you all tomorrow. Take care.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, I just got to town and I need a presentation printed for a big meeting tomorrow.
Well, Staples has everything you need to print, scan, and fax.
Great. Oh, just got a text. The home office made changes to the presentation.
No problem. You can access your files from a USB, email, or the cloud.
And the meeting isn't tomorrow, now it's today.
Our machines are self-service, so there's no waiting.
And it's not here. Now it's in Ebensburg.
I hear it's lovely this time of year.
Print, scan, fax, and copy at Staples, your office away from home.